Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente interkulturell.
Absolutely intercultural.
Welcome to show number 166 of Absolutely Intercultural. My name's Anne Fox and I'm in Denmark, and we do literally have a very packed show for you today. We'll be talking about the global problem of slavery and various ways of tackling it. And just in case you think it's got nothing to do with you, then just wait. We must also say congratulations to Diana Strohmeier, who was our 200th like on the Absolutely Intercultural Facebook page. Thank you to everyone who's liked the page, and we hope you like the links we share there periodically of things we find interesting in the intercultural field. In the last couple of weeks, it's mainly been about stereotypes. And another piece of big news is that we're trying out YouTube as a channel for sharing the podcast. You can find the link on our blog at www.absolutely-intercultural.com, or just search for Absolutely Intercultural directly on YouTube. And one very good reason for checking out our new YouTube channel is so that you can see much more of the art associated with the topic of our show today. And if that seems strange to mingle art with slavery, then listen for the rest. So today we're devoting the whole show to the topic of modern slavery and why we are all involved in sustaining this evil, even though we may consider it to be going on very far away from us. We've been talking mainly with Judy, who has moved to start the No Project after seeing a harrowing article in the newspaper about a Bulgarian woman who committed suicide in a toilet in the UK. There's basically only one strand to today's show, and that is that there is absolutely no excuse. You'll be hearing from Judy, who started the No Project, Lindsay Clanfield about why it's difficult to get the topic of slavery in course books, from Ismini Black about why she produces art about the slave trade, and from Cody Brotter, who wrote a 2-minute awareness-raising video for a global audience. So first, let's hear more about Judy's reaction to that original newspaper article 12 years ago.
I think that image pretty much turned my life upside down. And I, at the time I was writing, I was very much involved with the production of English language teaching material. And I looked at my own background. I'm a teacher trainer, a teacher. I'm a professional actor. I work in directing of theatre. I'm around events people, and I'm around artists and filmmakers, and sort of I'm around advertising people who I love because they're good at messaging. And I'm around writers. And I thought, okay, these are the people I know and I can ask favors from. And then I really started to learn a lot. You can learn a lot fast, especially now. 12 years ago, I don't think we even had YouTube, or I don't know what we had. We barely had Skype. But now you can learn fast, and you can also check data quite quickly. So I just thought, okay, knowing what I know, and we only have a certain number of months, days, hours on the planet, you know, what can I do about this? Because it doesn't go away. And I guess that's how I became involved. What sustains me is the absolutely brilliant creative energy of the young people I work with. Slavery is now illegal in every country in the world. However, it is anything but abolished. It is estimated that there are 20 to 30 million slaves on the planet as I speak. There are basically three criteria that define slavery, and they were the same criteria that have defined it for millennia: control, ownership, for financial gain. It's all about money.
And so does this happen in the country where these modern day slaves live, or does it happen when they move, or is it both?
Human trafficking is the modern day slave trade. It is the recruitment process, the transportation, the harboring, the exploiting of an individual, either, you know, to use their body or their organs. And so to answer your question about geographic location, most of the slaves on the planet today are in Southeast Asia. And we're talking about 19 million. And we could say, well, yes, tut, 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 that's terrible. But what's that got to do with me? I live in Paris. I live in Berlin. I'm in Copenhagen. I'm in Atlanta. It's got a lot to do with you. Do you eat shrimp? Yes, I love it. Okay, do you walk on beautiful carpets? Do you buy handmade carpets very cheaply in stores? Yes. Do you drink tea, coffee? Do you eat rice? Do you buy cheap jewelry from time to time at stalls? You know, the list goes on and on and on. We, as Westerners, for the most part, sustain the slave trade by not looking carefully at ethical sourcing of the products that we wear and walk on and eat and drink.
So there's a global network here at work, both the global network of the traffickers themselves and the global connections between us as consumers and how the products
Absolutely.
Are made.
Let's take chocolate. Now, 40% of the cocoa production on the planet comes from the Ivory Coast. Many plantations there, cocoa plantations, use slave labor, and specifically child slave labor. So on these cocoa plantations, you have kids that have been deceived from other countries, have been trafficked to the cocoa plantations, tiny little kids, like 10-year-olds, holding those massive machetes. They are beaten, they are hit, they are abused, they're starved, and the kids work day in, day out. Of course, they've never seen chocolate themselves. And there are so many injuries with these machetes. I mean, if you go to our site, I think, in the slavery, in the cocoa slavery, you'll see images which, you know, by permission from different filmmakers, of kids' backs full of sores, they've been whipped, beaten, massive gashes in their legs from these injuries. Now, that's what I see when I look at all the beautiful chocolate wrappers and the chocolate cookies and the donuts and the chocolate cake. That's what I see. I don't want that in my mouth. To paraphrase what one slave said on a plantation was, when you eat chocolate, you eat my flesh. We've changed it to a piece of artwork that a young kid did, and it was, when you eat chocolate, my blood is in your mouth. And that's the reality. Another area which we often neglect and forget too about cocoa production is that cocoa butter is the foundation for many makeup products, from lipstick to moisturizer to whatever. And so, I mean, if an artist wanted to do a very visual representation of that, basically you're rubbing somebody else's childhood and slavery on your face.
What would happen to the children if the products were not bought?
There are many things. Okay, so does building a school in the area answer the problem, the crime, shall we say? No, of course it doesn't, but it's a pretty good start. Because through education, through basic reading skills, which these kids are never going to get, they very, very slowly will learn about what their rights are. I'm not saying you're going to go in a day one and go, oh, these are the rights of the child. But inevitably, through general basic education of social studies, which they will then be exposed to, they'll realize that, oh, my goodness, you often hear this, too, from people who have been rescued and are involved in rehabilitation, shall we say, or restoration. It's like, wow, oh, my God, I never realized I was a victim of a crime.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm talking very across the board there. So to come back to answer your question about will it make a difference if we demand ethically sourced products? Yes, absolutely. I mean, in some countries, to buy fair trade chocolate or go to a cafe where they serve fair trade coffee. This is not a big deal. This is the norm. I've just returned from New Zealand, where pretty much every coffee shop have got the fair trade logo on the window. It's not an issue. It's normal. There are two actions immediately. First of all, learn more. Go online. It's a very fast learning curve. There are amazing, good videos out there on YouTube and Facebook. But the thing is to demand to know what is the source. Can you, for example, can you please tell me, does this chocolate product include child slavery? Does this cotton t-shirt, do you happen to know if the cotton was manufactured in a country where they use literally about a million kids every season picking cotton? What's very interesting, in countries where child labor is used for the cotton picking and then subsequently sold to, you know, very large stores for production in Europe, there have been global petitions in the last couple of years that have had an effect. I don't know if you can mention this. For example, Zara have agreed, no, we are no longer purchasing that. And that was a result of consumer power.
You can find Judy's No Project at www.thenoproject.org. And it's all about raising awareness about the problem. As a former EFL teacher, Judy sees covering the topic in English course books as one way of reaching her target group of young people. So why isn't slavery covered in the bestsellers sold all over the world? I spoke to Lindsay Clanfield, lead author on Macmillan's Global series, and asked him about parsnips.
My name is Lindsay Clanfield, and I'm a teacher, a teacher trainer, and a writer from Canada, but I currently live in Spain.
So can I ask you about something that sounds very strange, and that is that the English language publishers have some sort of guidelines which go under the acronym of parsnips, and we're not talking about the vegetable. What is it that you can or can't say?
Parsnips is an acronym that stands for P is for politics, A is for alcohol, R is for religion, S is for sex, N is for narcotics, I is for isms such as communism, socialism, anarchism. Some argue that the I is also for Israel. P is for pork. So parsnip is the acronym. And the parsnips are what publishers give as general guidelines to not include in materials that are going to a wide market audience. I was told overtly early on in my writing career that these things, I was given the lecture and told that these things were generally best steered clear of. Interestingly enough, one of the countries that I find is most strict in terms of the parsnip thing is the United States. They're so worried often about lawsuits brought to them by different pressure groups that the parsnip doesn't even come close to the list of things that are not allowed in books so as not to cause offense. However, I mean, writers often struggle against this and try to fit things in one way or another. The problem with many books is that the bigger the audience becomes, the more watered down these issues can become. That's in a nutshell what parsnip is.
So do you think there may be a niche for a book which explores the topic of modern day slavery?
I'd have to hear more about it before proceeding myself on a project like that. But I'm sure there is stuff out there that would be very interesting and worthwhile for students to learn about.
So you don't rule it out?
No, I wouldn't. As a topic in course books, I remember I did try once to do, now that I'm thinking about it, I tried to do an example of the present continuous as a model text, which was a poster, where it says, as you while you were reading this, I can't remember the number of millions of children are working for no money every day, or something like that. So it was kind of examples of present continuous, and then the ad ended with, "What are you doing about it?" So I thought it had a question, it had an affirmative sentence, so it had your grammar there, but it also had a message. That was considered just rather too bleak, and so that was after a bit of to and froing, that was not allowed in a book that I wanted to put in. However, it doesn't mean that that kind of thing wouldn't be something interesting. The problem, of course, with parsnippy type things is, and I'm a member of the Global Issues Special Interest Group with Aya Teufel, and we often have chats about this, is the danger that this becomes, it can become very gloomy and very either too gloomy and so depressing that there's nothing really to talk about, or that it becomes something very earnest. So by earnest, I mean this is things that have been criticized of my writing when I've been trying to address some of these issues, is sometimes I stray too much in a kind of preachy format, which can be a turnoff for some people in a classroom. You're sort of like, okay, teacher, we know the material is preaching to us. This is characteristic, I think, of some of some North American, very very good North American material addressing issues on things like racism, sexism, and stuff like that. Sometimes it can be done in a way which seems very heavy-handed and too earnest. So the key is to be creative and kind of nimble with that, and also lead the students so that they themselves are coming up with ideas, solutions, criticizing things from different angles, rather than telling them, this is the way it is, and isn't this terrible?
Okay, so it looks as though raising awareness through course books is a bit of a challenge. So maybe this is why the No Project does a great deal through the use of various art forms, including music, film, dance, and art. For example, on our blog, you'll be able to watch a hip-hop dance routine by the Request Dance Crew in New Zealand. Does art raise awareness? Here's how Judy describes the effect of Ismini Black's images on audiences. And then we hear from Ismini herself about why she was drawn to the No Project as an inspiration for her art.
When I'm in, say, a seminar with 200 people and there are posters around the wall of her work, or it comes up on a very bright screen in a PowerPoint, the young people who are looking at it are extremely moved, and it's like, oh, wow, oh my God. And I think seeing what she has achieved at her age actually motivates them to do the same. So her work is an inspiration to her peers.
So why this topic specifically? Because, for example, there's environmental disasters, there's humanitarian needs and so on. I mean, why did this speak to you specifically?
I guess. Well, I've always been more towards the humanitarian rather than the environmental or that, but it sort of hit me that it could be anybody, that, you know, it wasn't a matter of being in a country where there are less opportunities or somewhere where you're more vulnerable, but it was sort of something that could affect me, that by chance it hasn't affected me, possibly. There may be other factors involved, but I took it very personally. And I sort of thought, you know, why not me?
So how do you use art in a campaign then?
I think the main aspect of it is, I mean, my main aim as an artist is to raise awareness, and simply to evoke empathy. So by creating a piece, even something that may not be like a project, like a poster or some sort of campaign, even a strong art piece, if it will speak to the viewer, if it will, like a slap in the face, something to show them what Judy told me. So I think that's the main, I think that's my main aim generally, to evoke empathy. Generally when, having listened to an RSA animate on the empathic civilization, I realized that this is the main aspect that makes people act against something, thinking that, you know, what if I was in their place? What if it was me? What if I could do something to help?
So it's empathy that's at the root of this. You mentioned the RSA Animate talk on empathy, and that is a brilliant, brilliant talk. Yes, I agree.
I've worked a lot with meat and with its colouring, its texture, and sort of the connotations behind that. And I think I found that that has been the most shocking to people. Like what I've been working with lately is sort of this idea of the in-between alive and the dead, being in this state where you're not in control of your own body or of your own future. And I think this depiction with meat, with flesh, is some of the strongest imagery, and I've got some of the strongest reactions for it.
That's interesting, because you're making me think about the outrage that was caused by the dress that Lady Gaga wore once, and about the current outrage about horse meat being in meals that are supposedly beef. People do get very, very emotionally upset about meat.
I think meat is something I could stick with throughout my whole life, possibly. I find that wherever I go, sometimes I try to get away from it and I'm always brought back to it. You know, changing it and simply studying it, it's something that is very close to the human, I feel, because it's what we're made of.
You know, the young woman from Africa, mm-hmm. who we were thinking of chatting mm-hmm. to you, she had to leave the country very quickly mm-hmm. because she was getting death threats. Mentioned that. Otherwise, I think she would have spoken.
Yeah, that was a pity, but I do understand.
I said to her, what would be a message if young people were listening to this? What would you want to tell them? And I think, as I recall, she said something to the effect of, look, this could be someone from your family. Mm. This could be your sister, your cousin, your daughter. This could be you.
Yeah.
I think she also said about informing the parents, which was interesting, rather, you know,
mostly yes.
the parents.
Yes. In terms of commercial sexual exploitation, she said, we have to teach the parents how to raise their kids.
What does that mean? What does that imply?
I think she was saying that if there is a culture where paying for sex is endorsed without thought behind it, mothers and fathers are raising, in general, boys to think it's fine to go and buy sex, then think twice because it's not a lifestyle choice most of the time.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that the young woman or young man might be smiling. Of course they're smiling.
The No Project is about reaching young people. And as we've already heard, Judy believes that film is a very powerful medium. And this led to a great collaboration recently between the No Project and Hot House Productions, which is a student project arm of Boston University's film course. Cody Brodder was the writer responsible for scripting a PSA, public service announcement film, without words to a global audience. The result is called Now You Know, and I spoke to Cody about how he tackled it.
We Skyped with Judy and met her that way. She started telling us things that none of us, I think it's fair to say none of us, but I certainly didn't know. And again, as like to consider myself an informed person who checks up on the news every single day. You know, that's what I do all day throughout the day. And because I was taught in school that slavery was abolished, but it's not. It's more than ever. It's just a business now. Primarily, we are a public awareness initiative. It's very hard to tackle. You know, sometimes you're writing a script for these short films because we'd like to keep doing more of these in a series. And, you know, it's like, how much responsibility do you have to tell every single type of slavery that's going on right now? Tell those stories in 2 minutes. You can't really do it. You sort of, it ends up being a creative art project where you have to pick just one story or a couple of stories, or as we do, and now you know, about 4 stories and intersperse those to tell the story of human trafficking in the 21st century.
So can I just ask you, so there you are, you've been contacted by a campaigner against slavery. Now, what was the actual brief that you were given?
Just that we would be making a PSA-style film for the No Project, an organization that is campaigning to raise awareness of slavery, modern slavery. And the brief, even more specifically, was that Judy did want to represent 3 types of human trafficking in her classification.
What? Who's the target group?
Young people was the demo, and she said she kept emphasizing the global aspect of it. So that added the huge layer of the inability to have dialogue or conversations at all between characters.
Can you give some examples of how you were able to communicate without words?
Yes. You know, one of the biggest challenges to express was the story of the maid and capture domestic slavery, when most people don't know, and I certainly didn't know, how many people, even in America, will take an immigrant's passport maybe and have them as their live-in maid and sort of keep them hostage and not pay them. And that's a hard story to tell without words. So in that challenge, I came up with having her look at longingly at photos of her family from home, and through her facial expressions. She's a wonderful actress. That's how you convey things without dialogue, because we all speak that global language and it's visual. And when then we have the woman, it was a hard scene to write when the society woman comes in and takes the passport and she's cleaning up and we were very happy, and that took the longest probably, because it was like, how do we do this without words? But that's how we came up with that, and that is what some people think is the strongest part of that film, Now You Know.
So why not go and watch the film on our blog and let us know whether you think the film, the dance, the art, whether they do raise awareness. Why not share your favourites on your own social networks and visit the No Project. Also, do leave comments on the blog, our Facebook page, or our new YouTube channel to tell us what you think. The next show will be coming to you from Laurent Borgman on June the 7th, so until then, stay tuned.
Absolutely intercultural.
Fullständig tvärkulturell.
Absolut interkulturalisch.
Absolutamente intercultural.
Absolutely intercultural.